to what degree is Washington horse trading with the exemptions versus is it bargaining with the exemptions? How isolated is this waiver making process? Come May, we will see if max pressure is max pressure.
This is Platts Capital Crude. I'm Brian Scheid. We're just a month away from a pivotal moment in global oil markets. In early May, the Trump administration will decide whether or not to extend waivers from Iran's sanctions to eight of Iran's biggest oil buyers. Analysts fully expect that the U.S. will extend these waivers, known as significant reduction exemptions, possibly to all eight nations, although there will be some pressure to further reduce imports of Iranian crude and condensate. Of course, it's more complicated than that. There's infighting within the administration over whether the U.S. should drop these waivers entirely so as to better employ the maximum pressure campaign on Iran and force their exports down to zero, or to keep them in place, a path which would lessen the impact on global oil prices. On today's show.
So my name is Behnam Ben Talablu. I'm a senior fellow here at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. I basically cover anything and everything related to the Iranian threat, but mostly the political, security, and economic portfolios.
Iran is currently exporting about 1.1 to 1.2 million barrels per day of crude and condensate, the vast majority of it covered under the U.S. sanctions waivers. So what impact have these waivers, these significant reduction exemptions, had on the administration's overall Iran policy?
I'm very glad to use the term significant reduction exemptions because these are technically exemptions that the administration has given because of a plan to get to zero. Some say that the administration has wielded the threat of getting countries to zero during the summer of 2018 to help countries reach that downward trend. The whole point is that you want to have Iran and exports continue to decline. On the Iran policy side, before you get to the energy side, so there's three components of this: the Iran policy side, the energy side, and the global side. On the Iran policy side, if you are looking to restrict revenue coming into the Islamic Republic, even in the face of some waivers, you can still achieve that goal because some of the sanctions that the president has restored actually lock up Iranian revenue that they would be getting from oil sales in foreign banks abroad, denominated ideally in local currency, that force Iran to go shopping in those jurisdictions for humanitarian goods. I think about a month ago, there was a story about Iran importing billions of tons of sugar or paying, I don't know how many billions or how many millions for this sugar. This is basically because Iran has an account in India because India has an exemption and Iran is going shopping for foodstuffs, humanitarian products, agricultural products, whatnot. So this is the waiver exemption working, as well as the lockup provision of restored U.S. sanctions working to make sure Iran doesn't repatriate revenue. Because if you want max pressure to work, you have to have a dwindling amount of revenue coming into the country. So that's the Iran policy side. The energy side, of course, gets a little bit more complicated because the administration does continue to attest that there still is significant supply for Iranian crude to be restricted. That's the kind of overall macro level. The administration's position in this regard was buoyed, I think, starting in April of 2018, when there was talk of apparently coordination with the Saudis or discussions with the Saudis for having them increase output, not necessarily swallow Iran's market share, but take up more of Iran's market share. And then, of course, the discussion on energy is affected by other global dynamics, as well as the economies inside the countries that purchase Iranian oil. For instance, Japanese refiners are kind of geared towards taking Iranian crude versus a different caliber of crude, given the significant difference between Iranian and Arabian sulfur content. So these are all dynamics that have impacted the oil market. And then the third, of course, is global, because as in all the countries that the U.S. has given exemptions to continue to purchase Iranian oil, there are a series of bilateral issues that the U.S. issuing or withdrawing of a waiver could impact. For instance, India is a U.S. partner. China is a U.S. adversary. Both of them have waivers or exemptions. Both of them are pretty well integrated into the global economy, and both of them deal with Washington qualitatively differently. And so what could be a punishment to one might be seen as an inducement towards the other. So Washington has calibrated and needs to continue to calibrate these exemptions toward both its adversaries and allies that have received exemptions.
So with that, it sounds like this is a new, almost diplomatic tool they can use, or economic tool they can use, the administration can use. What's your expectation come May? Do you see these exemptions being renewed? Will they be changed in some way?
You know, we're seeing signs in the press, and I think the whole month of March has been interesting because the press is talking to different groups of people, and people are hedging. They're wondering again, does the administration mean it when they say they want to get to zero? What is the administration's priority? Are they looking to restrict the sale of the commodity, Iranian exports, or are they looking to continue to put pressure on Iran on the financial sanctions side and target the revenue rather than the commodity? It seems to be driven towards the revenue, but what is bolstering the revenue is, in fact, the export of the commodity. And when we talk about Iran engaging in illicit activity, turning off transponders on tankers, not knowing where Iranian ships are at all times, this kind of is a vicious self-fulfilling prophecy, self-feeding cycle. So Washington needs to kind of focus on both sides. You can't over-focus on one, even though I think it's done a very good job of focusing on already the financial sanctions side and the revenue side. Come May, you know, I know the U.S. wants to get to zero. There is apparently significant supply or sufficient supply. The question is, how much will the outsized bilateral issues impact countries like India and China, which are major hydrocarbon economies? How much will the distance between Turkey, which is a NATO ally, NATO partner allegedly still, between Washington and Ankara over the Syria issue, over ties with Russia, impact the process of giving a waiver? Is this just an energy consideration? Is this a security policy consideration? To what degree is Washington horse trading with the exemptions versus is it bargaining with the exemptions? How isolated is this waiver-making process in the administration? And then, I'd point out that in addition to the oil exemptions, there are civilian nuclear exemptions, and there are other limited commercial exemptions for imports of Iranian gas for electricity generation purposes to Iraq, as well as investment in an Iranian port. So the administration has multiple vectors to put pressure on Iran, to leave pressure on Iran, and come May, we will see if max pressure is max pressure.
Bloomberg reported this week that there's this fissure in within the White House. You know, the NSC, John Bolton, he's pushing for, you know, no exemptions. That's the best way to get Iran to zero.
Iran continues to seek nuclear weapons to intimidate peaceful people all around the globe and ballistic missiles to use as delivery systems.
But then there's this other side, you know, Secretary Mike Pompeo saying, you know, we don't want to shock oil markets.
We did not want to lift the price of oil, and we were successful doing that. So when the president left the deal, it was trading at 74. When our sanctions went back into effect and we had taken off 1 million barrels of Iranian crude, oil was at 72.
What's the view within the administration, and does this debate complicate the path forward on U.S.-Iran policy?
Well, I think in this regard, the article you mentioned does a good job of laying out different stakeholders. I think it's no secret that the State Department takes issues beyond Iran into account. So it's no surprise then that Ambassador Bolton, who heads up the National Security Council, is indeed looking to put more pressure on Iran and has been a hawk on Iran issues for quite some time now. So there are different stakeholders in the administration. But I think many share the goal of max pressure. The question is, how do you get there as safely as possible, as cost efficient as possible, and while bringing the few allies that we have in this regard on board towards that ultimate goal? If the administration is more concerned about domestic energy prices come May, then maybe there will be more waivers than we expect. You know, there was significant kind of pushback against the administration after the 8 exemptions given in November, not necessarily by foreign governments, but by a significant amount of the private sector, because they were hedging on the zero not necessarily being a talking point. Yeah. So we'll see businesses in the private sector also try to hedge and kind of read this crystal ball here. But I think those different stakeholders you laid out seem to be what matter. Because the question is Iran your priority? Is energy prices your priority? Or is the U.S. bilateral relationship with the purchases of Iranian energy your priority? And of course, within the U.S. government, there are a different set of priorities, and it's natural for them to compete.
What do you see as the big risks, though, of keeping the exemptions in place?
So definitely as someone who focuses on Iran professionally, I would say that the risk is that you have not made max pressure. And another risk involved with that kind of statement, you know, it sounds sexy to say, but is that Iran, more so than ever before, understands that the pressure policy it is facing is the result of a particular change and the result of a particular feeling within this U.S. administration, which is unique. So if Iran is incentivized to wait out this administration, or if Iran thinks the Trump administration would be one term, and Iran could be watching things that are happening in this country here in the U.S. about the Democrats wanting to re-enter the nuclear deal, which would mean suspending or lifting some of these heavy oil sanctions, Iran may not come to the table during the Trump administration. And if oil sanctions and other energy sanctions are some of our most powerful financial tools, and if the administration is genuine about getting Iran to come back to the table, then we'll need to really throw in the kitchen sink here to get Iran to come back. So this is a measure of the administration's commitment to the pressure policy as much as it is a measure of the administration's commitment to keeping energy prices stable, as well as to how the purchases of Iranian crude factor into U.S. bilateral relations.
President Trump on Thursday urged OPEC against taking actions that would lead to higher oil prices. He wrote, "Very important that OPEC increase the flow of oil. World markets are fragile. Price of oil getting too high. Thank you."
So we saw President Trump is again tweeting to OPEC and saying, you know, we need OPEC to increase production due to the impact that it could have on gasoline prices, basically. But if the Trump administration goes forward with these waivers again, how much does this Iran policy play into what they can get OPEC to do?
Well, I think what they desire OPEC to do is to, as you mentioned, continue to produce significantly. It's no secret the administration does like lower oil prices. But the administration's focus on the Iran issue, I think, is definitely what's driving this. I think they understood the private sector pushback in November. I think they understand this political timeline that I've laid out here, that Iran is watching American domestic politics and reacting or withholding back its reaction in a particular way. So if it puts all of these pieces of the puzzle together, it would behoove it to significantly restrict the number of waivers it gives, if not altogether eliminate. But again, this could be just as much of a measure of interfactional competition within the administration as much as how relevant is the Iran issue in the larger issues that the Treasury, White House, and State Department focus on a daily basis.
How does that complicate those Saudi relations if these exemptions go forward as they are again? I mean, I know the Saudis weren't too pleased when they were put into place. Does that further complicate the U.S.-Saudi relationship?
That's an excellent question, because I think it stands to significantly complicate the U.S.-Saudi relationship at a critical time when the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are making different sounds and different moves of the direction of the war in Yemen, which the U.S. hopes to come to a close soon, or at least that's the sentiment coming out of the U.S. Senate currently, as well as the kind of aftermath of the entire Khashoggi affair. As well as it is recent revelations about Saudi interest in developing a domestic ballistic missile capacity, as well as revelations about this administration's potential or alleged interest in giving the Saudis kind of a pass on civilian nuclear energy production at home. So there are all of these outsized bilateral issues that exist in the U.S.-Saudi relationship. And then if you reintegrate the classical one, the oil production issue, in the relationship between Washington and Riyadh, and you take into account that Saudi sought to grow exports, Saudi sought to have oil be relatively cheaper as the U.S. wanted to withdraw from the nuclear deal in May. And then you take into account recent reporting that says the Saudis want to cut production after April and the administration's desire to have cheaper oil, then I think you have the perfect setup for a crisis.
Benham, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Platts Capital Crude is produced by Brian Scheid and Megan Gordon in Washington, D.C., and Jason Lindquist in Houston. We'll see you next week.